Shorter episode today, so shorter intro. Track and field did very well, baseball not so much. For one last time, hello and welcome to episode 43 of the award-winning Talking Dogs. I'm Cohen Carpenter, here with Kai Ulbricht. Kai, how's it going?
A little bit of a somber start there. This is my last time recording with you.
Yeah, this is sad. It's so sad.
At least we have some fun things to talk about, but I'm gonna miss you.
Yeah, no, it's we're going out on a high note, and I guess this is a nice fallback, because I could have always assumed that to balance out the somberness of the final Cohen Carpenter Talking Dogs episode, we would have very great track and field performances.
Yeah, any day of the week it's going to be great track and field performances.
Yeah,
but to start us off on one of those somber notes, we have baseball.
Yeah, this is nothing in comparison to the Cohen Carpenter departure.
No,
goodness
of course,
gracious.
We got to warm up to it.
Goodness gracious, what happened?
Got to get the tear ducts warmed up here before they overflow later.
Yeah, we're here to tell you what happened, so we'll figure it out with you guys. There is some good news we'll get to at the end. Obviously, the GPAC season is over with the tournament being our participation in the tournament being over.
Yep.
I believe when does the championship game happen? I don't know. I don't care.
we didn't pay attention after
we did not.
No spoilers.
So, yeah, right. Essentially, how it boils down to, it felt like a championship game. So you had four teams up in Yankton that were playing out of a pool there, and then four teams down in Seward that were playing out of a pool here, because those were the, you know, one and two seeds respectively. And whoever would gonna be come out of this pool would play the winner of the other pool, and then that would be the championship game. I believe in South Dakota, and it was somewhere in Iowa. I couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. Again, we didn't make it, so we don't care.
Yep.
And it came down to, because we did drop a game in the first day of the tournament, that we would have to win back-to-back games against a pretty good Briarcliff spot. I mean, they're scrappy. They're 26 and 22 on the season, so they're hovering right around 500. Their conference record would actually indicate that they, you know, wouldn't perform as well in the tournament, but they came playoff risers for sure in this tournament, and they really showed out. And you could see that in game one. Game one, 6-2-5, you had to win if you're Concordia. 6-5 win over Briarcliff at PCP. We'll get to the pitching aspect of it here, because there is a storyline on the mound for sure. But Concordia, huge 5-run second inning. That kind of got us out in front, and then things got away in the fourth inning where Briarcliff scored 4 runs of their own, actually tied things up in the top of the fourth. But we ended up getting 1 run in the bottom of the fourth, and that was all she wrote. That's all we needed. Because we had a guy on the mound locking things down. Christian Gutierrez.
Yeah, what a game from him.
Oh, my goodness. So this, I mean, if you just look at the stat line, and it's crazy. This is the playoffs, so you're playing better offenses and things. Got the win, his 9th win of the season, so 9-2 now. And we'll see what happens in national play, but 9-2 now on the season. 9 innings pitched. He went the entire game. 6 hits. He gave up 5 runs, but only one of them were earned. We'll break that down. 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. He hit 2 guys, but other than that, 1 earned run through 9 innings of baseball. That's basically what he's been doing all season.
I mean, you can definitely tell he's one of those mature guys. He's been in these situations before.
Yep.
He's not going to get flustered in a big game. He can go the full distance. Just incredible game from him. You said 1 earned run throughout
phenomenal.
9 innings.
So, yeah. So, just to break it down, I mentioned they had 4 runs in that fourth inning. Bryant, R. Bryant, which I don't know if you noticed, but if you ever go through on the, at least on our version of the box score, and I wonder if it's different for different schools, but we have our entire first name, first and last name of all of our players
mm-hmm.
in the box score, and then you go to the other team, and it's the first initial last name.
Yeah.
So, sorry any Briarcliff Charger diehard fans that are listening to this episode, but you're only getting the last name. Bryant for the Chargers reached on a fielding error to start off the inning by the shortstop, would have been Blumberg. And then beyond that, you know, Gutierrez registers 2 outs. But in the terms of ERA, in ERA's eyes, because ERA can be a very fickle thing, that inning should be over. Because if the shortstop doesn't commit an error, it's an out. And then with the 2 preceding outs, or the, not preceding, preceding is before, right?
Yes, preceding would be before.
So with the two
later outs,
That doesn't sound as
post-seeding.
Smart. Post-seeding. The two post-seeding outs, the inning would be over.
Latter outs.
The two latter outs.
We need more syllables.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We'll get to it. The two outs that happened after the first out, the inning would have been over and there wouldn't have been room for four runs to score. It is very interesting. I think earned runs is a very fun part of baseball when it gets down to it. But when you look at the end of the day, Gutierrez obviously probably not happy that he gave up four runs because you deal with the guys that are on base and the batter that's in the box, and at a point, you know, you still had a chance to get out of the inning.
Yep.
With runners on, it just would have been a four-out inning.
But so they don't credit those runs as earned?
No.
So it's only one earned run still because those other four shouldn't have happened?
Yeah. So if just to illuminate, so they reached on a fielding error by shortstop, and then there's a single. And the guy who reached on an error advanced to second. And then the third batter of the inning was hit by a pitch. So in reality, it was bases loaded, one out. It was bases loaded, no outs. In earned runs eyes, it was runners on first and second with one out. That's why after you get a fielder's choice to reach the there was a fielder's choice play on the very next at bat. In RBI ends up coming, a run ends up coming across the plate. In earned run averages eyes, there's no runner on third to come across the plate there.
Okay.
So, therefore, that would have been unearned. And then, Gutierrez, so it was a fielder's choice, so that's the first out of the inning. And then, Relmer is out at second, and that is the second out of the inning. So, they're unearned for two different reasons. So the first unearned run comes across because there was no runner on third to score that run on the fielder's choice. It just would have been an out at first.
Okay.
Had they made the play. Then Gutierrez registers two outs, and in conjunction with that first out, that first error, which should have been an out, was three outs. So anything, he could have given up 12 runs in this inning. Hint, hint, spoiler alert. and if that all would have been unearned, because in earned runs eyes, the inning is over.
Gotcha.
So it's two different reasons why they're unearned, but all of them were unearned.
So what I'm getting at is I'm glad I'm not the guy who has to keep track of earned runs, because that sounds horrible.
No, it's a few you're a few YouTube tutorials away from completely.
You think
understand.
I could do it?
I think I give you half an hour on YouTube, and then, you know.
Okay, maybe watch a couple more games.
Yeah, a few pointers, but it is at the end of the day. All that you need to know is Gutierrez can pitch.
Yes, he definitely can.
That guy can pitch, and it was huge that he went nine innings, because this is a back-to-back. This was doubleheader, same day. And they were going to need to save their bullpen for the second game. Because, again, you need to win both of these or else you go home. And that brings us to game two. I'm going to hold off for saying the final score off rip. I'll dive in, like, inning by inning. This was a pitcher's duel to start things off. I think you mentioned, we talked about this before the podcast started, but we talked about this last podcast too, is it was a very tricky situation as to who was going to pitch these two games. You have Gutierrez, who's fairly well rested. We hadn't seen Micah Sweetin pitch yet.
Right, and we were thinking, like, oh, we could start him, but...
We could start him, maybe if you're crazy, you put Alex Johnson back out there on, like, 3 days rest, but the other consideration... I think the GPAC championship game was only a few days later.
Yep.
So if you do that with Johnson, then you're out your ace.
Exactly.
And you're definitely out Gutierrez. So now you're talking. And I mean, Blumberg's not bad. Or Braxton Greenberg is not bad as your third pitcher. But going into a championship game, you would love just to have your ace, especially if it's a one game championship.
You want your
game.
Number one guy,
right?
And Micah Sweetin was unavailable for these games,
and this is
due to injury.
So that was what we were thinking. It's like, okay, well, you've got another stud is Micah Sweetin, but he was unavailable due to injury. I don't know. Did the Jake Knable article say anything specific?
Not that I remember. I'll recheck it while you keep talking.
I don't know if it was anything big, because I don't remember anything like disastrous happening. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he's okay. Would love for him to be okay come Nationals time. Either way, we had Jake Nelms out on the mound, which is not a name that you hear often on the podcast. And it was going to look like it was going to be a bullpen day.
Yep.
Be a bullpen day, because your starters were either injured or out or couldn't be pitched, or you were saving them and for a potential GPAC championship game. So you had Jake Nelms go the first inning and Sam Rambajan go the next inning. Oh, do you have the article pulled
it
up?
It just says the pitching depth of the Bulldogs was pushed to the max, especially with number four starter Micah Sweetin sidelined for the GPAC tournament.
Man.
That's all it says.
That is unfortunate timing.
Yes.
Unfortunate timing. But you got to piece together innings. And this is tough. This is really tough. I'm like not a fan of bullpen days, I guess, in general, because when you see a guy – when you see your starter and you need him to go the distance, like Gutierrez,
mm-hmm.
all it takes is for one guy to have his stuff,
right?
And he's got to be – he woke up on the right side of the bed, he ate a well-balanced breakfast, and he goes out there and he shoves. For a bullpen day, you're like at a minimum four guys
right?
all need to have well-balanced breakfast right side of the bed.
And we'll say that didn't quite happen.
It didn't quite happen, especially considering the format of this tournament where you had two doubleheaders in a – was it five games in a span of 3 days,
yeah,
I believe?
Yeah, it was nuts, and a couple of late nights as well.
A couple – you had this is worth shouting out too. To start this day, they were finishing a game.
Yeah.
They were – when this day started, which was May 3rd, at May 3rd at 12:30 in the morning, they were finishing a baseball game to keep their season alive.
Yep.
So and then they go out and the first game is at noon. This game was at 6, and there's literally three games in one day.
So wait, they probably finished this game at around 8 then. So they played three baseball games in the span of about 20 hours.
20 hours. Yeah.
I guess they started the other one at, was it 9?
They yeah.
started the other one?
Yeah, yeah.
So in the span of 23 hours, they started and finished three baseball games.
Yes. And, you know, usually you got to say, like, you know, whenever you're talking about, like, environmental things like that, you say, well, the other team plays with it, too. Like, if it's raining outside, the other team's playing mm-hmm. in the rain, too, right? However, this is no excuse, but it's worth noting that the game that went into the wee morning hours of May 3rd was against Dak West.
Right.
Briarcliff had played their game earlier that day and had gotten a full night's sleep. Anyways, that, you know, doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you play the game in front of you, and they played a better game. They had a guy on the mound, Saya, S-A-Y-A. Again, one of these guys, and we talked about this in the Dak West matchup, where the record was not all that illustrious.
Yep.
But he came in and he dealt. He got the win, which put him at 500 on the season because he was sitting at 2-3 coming into this game. He ends up going 6 innings pitched, only gives up 4 hits, 3 earned runs, and he strikes out 5 in a lineup that's pretty hard to strike out. Usually a lot of times the bread and butter with this Concordia lineup too is drawing a lot of walks. Only gave up 4 walks in his 6 innings of work. On the other hand, you had a bullpen day. As we mentioned from Concordia, you get through the first few innings. Inning 2, you give up a run. Inning 4, you give up a run. And in inning 5 is where things started to come apart, and that was a 14-run outburst.
Ooh.
From the Briarcliff Chargers. So it ended up being a 16-3 loss, 16 hits for the Chargers. Not the best day in the office. You ended up having some freshmen. You had to. I think by the end of the game, we couldn't have gone to the bullpen for anybody else if we wanted to.
No, we used 8 pitchers.
We used and all of them, every pitcher that could have been pitched in that game for the Bulldogs was pitched.
Yep.
Eventually. And then, you know, you got to feel for some of the guys who took the later innings of this game where it was like they were not intentionally. This was just the circumstance of the game, but they were definitely like left out there. Like, hey, we just got to get through this game, and no matter how much you've been struggling, you know, you just got to find the strike zone,
mm-hmm.
do your best. And credit to the Chargers too. It's not. I mean, we gave up our fair share of walks, but across 8 pitchers, we had 6 walks.
So it's. It's not horrible.
It's not like we were just loading up the bases and walking in runs. Like they were finding pitches to hit, and they were shellacking them. They were going all over. I was actually at this game. It was a rough one to watch, but
mm-hmm.
man, it was the perfect storm of bad circumstances.
Of us, yeah, not fielding as well on the day.
Not fielding as well. 2 errors.
Having to use 8 pitchers is never ideal.
Yep. And you know what? You can sit here and go, oh well, they. you know, they played a game at 1 a.m. They were still off the game, and we were low on our bullpen. And listen, if you win that first game, if you win that first game against Briarcliff, where you brought a four-run lead
into the ninth inning,
and then all you got to do is win one game today, and you are smiling happy off to the GPAC championship game.
And if
game.
You think about it, if you win that first game, then Briarcliff gets thrown in that consolation bracket. They have to play the midnight game.
Yep, they have to play the midnight game.
And then come off and win two in a row.
So, you know, we could talk about the rain, and we could talk about the weather, and we could talk about the scheduling all we want. But, you know, if in the words of Dwight Schrute, if ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a very Merry Christmas. So... It was a bad set of circumstances, but one that could have been avoided by better baseball play earlier in the tournament bracket. But this is not the end of the story for the Bulldogs, not for this season at least. And before we get into the national tournament, GPAC conference play ends, so we get the GPAC conference awards, and man, did we clean up. Jaden Quinn goes back-to-back Player of the Year for the GPAC.
Wow.
So he, if you'll remember, in 2024, he split it with Joey, which is incredible that you've had three Player of the Years in the last 2 years.
Yeah. Doesn't usually happen.
Is one way to put it. Alex Johnson, Pitcher of the Year. And you also had Ty Nikolajczyk get a gold glove at second base. He goes back-to-back because he got an NAI baseball overall gold glove at second base. Him, along with the two we just mentioned, plus Braxton Greenberg, plus Jaden Jordal, plus Matt Rhodes, and Dayton Schmidt, were all first-team GPAC on the all-conference team. Which, nice. that's half a team right there.
That is half a team, and let's continue and fill out our roster.
And second team, which is crazy. Second team is Christian Gutierrez.
They must have made their decision before that last game.
Yeah, right? It must have, because that definitely would have swayed some votes. Bradley Holick is also, which is crazy that Jaden Quinn is the Player of the Year. Bradley Holick hit more home runs than him, didn't he?
That's true, yeah.
Like, he just edged him out in the home run. And then you got Michael Welch, awesome catcher this entire season for the Bulldogs. And then honorable mention, you got Jimmy Blumberg, Bronx Lewis, and Micah Sweetin. So, just really, also, hey, shout out Micah Sweetin.
Yeah, freshman.
Are you kidding me? Micah Sweetin, freshman? A young guy, too. Let's talk about Matt Rhodes. Matt Rhodes coming off the NAIA Freshman of the Year, also following it up with a first-team All-GPAC.
Feels like he's been here for a long time.
Oh, my goodness, dude. It's one after another. You have Joey Gabranski, Jaden Quinn, and Matt Rhodes, dare I say he's the future of the program?
Agreed.
He's slugging like he is. There's some youth here. You talk about, like, the old heads, and they got, obviously, putting up the career numbers that Gabranski and Jaden Quinn put up. It's easy to get lost in the fact that there's some young studs on this squad.
I mean, Matthew Rhodes certainly could challenge for some kind of school records.
He was up near 20 home runs this season,
wouldn't be shocked if he gets one of those RBI records.
I think,
you know,
he's
getting 5-6-7 in a game.
Yeah, especially if they keep batting him clean up.
And I don't know if you mentioned it in that 6-5 game, but four of our runs came from a grand slam from him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Matt Rhodes, huge grand
that
slam
second
in that
inning,
first game.
Grand slam to put us up by 3 or 4.
Here's a question, though, because I remember we talked about this in an earlier podcast. Jaden Quinn is stupid, averaging like 1.1 RBIs per hit.
Yeah, crazy.
A lot of that's Ty Nikolajczyk, a guy that bats 350, and he's got like a 380, almost like probably like a 400 on base percentage.
Mm-hmm.
The question for Matt Rhodes is, does he get his Ty Nikolajczyk? Just a guy who loves the base pass.
Yep.
That's always on base for when he does hit a home run. It's going to be a crooked number rather than solo shots.
Right, because you don't see Ty getting a lot of those RBI numbers, the big hits, but he is always getting home.
That's not what you pay him for. Or I guess that's not what you give him a scholarship for. Is to get those RBI numbers. He's a leadoff hitter. He's kind of the prototypical, like, because, you know, a lot of times in like modern baseball, you would see like some managers would have the approach that you put Jaden Quinn leadoff, because I think over the course of a season, your leadoff hitter, just by virtue of him batting first in the order, is going to have probably, you know, 20 to 30 more at-bats than the second guy, and so on and so on. So 20 to 30 more at-bats for Jaden Quinn versus Ty Nikolajczyk. How many more homers does that net you?
Right.
How much win probability does that add? Ty Nikolajczyk, and I kind of appreciate Dupik for doing this, is just a prototypical leadoff guy where he is super high average, and he can steal the bases if he wants to. He's not going to get out on the base pass, and he's going to be an RBI for Jaden Quinn when he comes through with the big hits. Talking about Dupik, Coach of the Year. That's his fourth.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Me neither.
I did not know that. So he had a few. He gets it in 2025. Kind of went on a crazy tear. 2017, 2019 he got it. And then this is back-to-back too. So not only did we get back-to-back players of the year, we had back-to-back coaches of the year. So
feel bad for taking awards away from everyone else.
Yeah, right? And it's nice.
There's got to be none left for anyone.
It's nice to have the matching hardware there.
We can make a full team plus some out of all conference awards.
Yeah.
Plus no, coach.
As if our shelves weren't stocked enough. You know what I feel bad for is the guy who's got to come in there and redo all the career records in the Walls leaderboard.
I don't even know how they do that.
I think we probably have a guy.
Probably.
We'll get to it. We're obviously getting into it in baseball. Just to put a bow on things, Concordia 40-11 overall record. We are set to host our first opening round of the NAIA National Tournament next week. That's going to be anywhere from May 12th to May 15th. What time? What date? We don't know. Selection show is tomorrow, Wednesday. It will be at 4 p.m. If you go to the CUNE baseball website and click on the article that has all the GPAC nominations and stuff like that, there is a link to the live selection show that you can watch. And we are going to play. We will find out who we play and the times we play at that selection show.
Sweet.
But just to finish that thought, we definitely have to keep like an engraving guy on the retainer, right?
You'd think so.
We need someone because we break a lot of records at this school.
In baseball.
In everything. In
track.
Yeah. We just got done with Austin Jablonski doing everything.
Uh-huh.
And now we've got, we'll get to Adriana Rodensel here in a bit.
Just doing everything.
Everything that baseball's been doing. It has been,
We got tennis this season breaking
tennis
records.
Tennis this season is going crazy. All right, you know what?
Our engraving guy is going to be getting paid overtime
this year. So excited. Let's just get right into it. How is track and field doing?
Track and field is doing very well. So they just had the conference meets of the GPAC championships. This was at Hastings. And this is one of those meets where they actually have team scoring. So most of the previous meets, it's just an individual thing. But then for conference and nationals and some of those other bigger meets, you actually get a team score as well.
Is that worse or better for us? What do you think?
Having a team score?
Yeah. Because I know when we were talking about wrestling, we said we were more like a team that favored the team versus the individuals.
Yeah, so with wrestling, it's different because the format of the competition is different.
Mm-hmm.
Like the dual format, it's just you versus one person in one
sure
match.
Yeah.
Whereas in the tournament style, you can have up to like six or seven matches.
So in track and field, there wouldn't be a team that's like built specifically for the team format versus just individual events.
You can definitely have. That's tricky. You can be better in certain types of meets. So you could be, if you have a bunch of people who are pretty good,
mm-hmm.
you'll be really good at small meets that score because all your pretty good people score highly.
We'll do pretty good.
You'll get, you know, first place in everything.
Yeah.
And you'll get lots of points. Versus the team that has a couple people who are really, really
elite.
Good. They're going to lose to the other team in the small meet, but when you go to nationals, those people
I
are going to be getting points because they're really good, where the pretty good people are not going to place.
I see.
If that
I
makes
see.
Sense.
Okay.
So I'd say we are, on the women's side especially, we are built for a big meet.
Big meet, yeah.
Because we have people who are going to be getting first, second, and third at nationals.
At nationals. Yeah, we're, oh my God.
And so if you look at the team scores from this meet, the men placed fourth out of 11, and then the women placed second out of 12, sorry. Doan swept it,
unfortunately. They're really good at track.
They're really good. They're a very deep squad. They have a lot of those pretty good athletes,
mm-hmm.
but then they also have some of those really good athletes.
I think I know where their athletic department budget goes.
Yeah, not football.
It ain't football.
But definitely the track and field team. They are a historically good team in the GPAC and nationally. If you go to their field house ever, it is just littered with track and field, GPAC, and national banners.
Yeah.
So no surprise to see them winning. It's kind of been Doan and Concordia at the top of the GPAC and national standings on the GPAC side for quite a bit. So no surprise to see them going 1-2 on the women's side and then 1-4 on the men's side. But then getting into the individual accolades, we will just start off.
Oh,
we'll just start off right at the really good part. Adriana Rodensel, with a couple pretty good performances. To start us off, she placed first in the 100 meter hurdles in a 13.66 conference meet record. She then placed placed first in the 200, 24.69. She was then first in the 400 hurdles, 58.90 conference meet record, school record.
Dude.
Then, if we go down to her second place performance, it
yes,
was
please carry on.
The 4x1, 46.80 school record. That featured Rhode Ensel, Emily Losecki, Kayla Kirchner, and Addison McCarter. And then, to wrap it all up, the open 100 meters, third place, 12.12. Five podium finishes.
Oh my God.
Five all-conference awards. A GPAC Meet Outstanding Athlete Award for, I believe, her fourth time?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable to just do that.
Okay, okay, here's something. Are you done with the Rhode Ensel part of this?
Yes.
Okay, so here's a quick intervention. We'll get back to the other scores. And this is kind of a fun little debate for the last episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
2020s, because this is what we know. 2020 Concordia athletes. Is she the best? So I think you've gotten the running. I think you've got Gabransky,
yep.
Quinn, Jablonski,
Smith, Tristan.
Tristan Smith, Noah Schutt.
And you've got
Rhode Ensel.
Are there any other who on our volleyball team would be?
I think Ashley Keck.
Yeah.
Ashley Keck's pretty crazy. And then who am I missing? Who's the speedster on women's soccer? Garner?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Kirsten.
Kirsten?
Can throw maybe Martine in there for men's soccer.
Yeah, yeah. So who is it? I'm leaning Rhode Ensel.
Me too.
Is that crazy?
I mean, she's been the most dominant in everything.
In everything. And then she okay, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing that I think adds some fuel to the fire for the Rhode Ensel argument, right? So you talk about like Gabransky, Gwynn. Obviously these other athletes are in more team oriented sports.
Right.
However, when you look at what she's done on the national stage,
mm-hmm.
especially indoor, she got like third in the 100-meter hurdles, or was it 60-meter hurdles?
It was something top five for sure.
Something top five like that. I think you look at like these other athletes who have been awesome, right? Gabransky, Quinn, like none of those teams really made it super far in nationals, right? I mean, even like football, to no fault of our own, we didn't end up making the playoffs,
yep.
right? It's hard to argue with that kind of production.
And I think she's clutch. She doesn't.
Yeah.
She every meet, every big meet, she shows up.
Yes. Yes. You can always count on her. Like you said, like this demonstrates, she's going to be on multiple podiums.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's crazy.
I mean, if you look at the team scores, we were 14 points ahead of Dort in the standings. And I think Adriana, she accounted for, if you count her relay, at least 40 points just by herself.
How many points total do we have as a women's team?
So we had 163 total points.
Dude, that's insane.
Yeah.
And how many athletes do we send?
Ooh, that I'm not sure. But so we look at, you get 10 points for first place. So she has 30 points just off her first place finishes alone.
Yeah.
You look at her 100, you get 6 points for that. So that's 36.
36.
And then if you go to that 4x1, you get 8 more points from that.
So she's over 40.
44 points.
So she contributed close to, if not more than, a quarter of the team's
yes,
production.
Just, so
by herself.
44 divided by 163, she contributed to 27%
of the team's total scoring.
Total points.
That is insane,
yeah.
Dude. That is insane. I would wonder, that would be an interesting stat that I think they should start keeping track of, that is like production.
Points in a career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Points produced.
Yeah.
Just straight up, like, what athlete on the track and field team has produced the highest percentage of their team's points? Because
mm-hmm.
27 seems like a high bar.
Yeah, especially for a good team.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. That's the other thing, too, that's worth keeping in mind is, like, this is a team that consistently, year in, year out, is competing, if not winning, GPAC
right.
titles.
It's not like she's on a horrible team, and of course she's gonna
and she's
get
just
all
gonna,
their points.
Yeah, she's a right in for
you
their
see
best
that in high
athlete.
School a lot where you get like a really small school, but they have like this really good thrower who wins
yeah.
the shot put and the hammer throw and all that.
Yeah,
and then they just get all their team's points
for championship contenders.
Yes,
And I, like, I would make the argument she's probably up there for championship contenders in terms of how many points she produces.
Yep.
And the percentage of those points that are hers.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think we're in agreement. I think Adriana is since 2020.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at her total today, she would have placed eighth by herself in the team scoring.
Oh my god.
Adriana beat Waldorf, Dakota Wesleyan, Morningside, and Briarcliff. If just she showed up to the meet.
She's incredible.
Yeah.
Yep, she's number one for me. She's number one for me.
You can make an argument for other people, but certainly she's one of the best.
I think number two is where it gets interesting, mm-hmm. but we don't have time for that on my debate.
Nope. But to continue with other people who were doing really well, not just her, we had Abby Wolgamuth, who won the hammer throw, GPAC champion.
She's been doing really good.
Yes, excited to see her at Nationals. 54-88 for our men. It is the return.
Oh my gosh, yes!
Of Johnny Jerkin.
He's back!
In the race walk. 23-47-39 in the 5K. GPAC champion. National qualifier. Unbelievable from him to return.
He's bringing a tear to my eye. He came back just for our last episode.
He got sick. He had a choir trip, and he comes back for our last episode.
And he's like, oh, they're doing one more episode Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
That one more.
Gotta show up on
Saturday.
For
the finals week episode.
Yes.
I love you, Johnny. That's awesome. And he nationally qualified, too?
Yes. Dude. He will be going to Nationals. We also had Emery Gutz win the javelin, 57-52 meters. Mason Ostermeyer win the pole vault, 4.8 meters. Second place when we had Kiki Nyanuk in the long jump, 5.67 meters. Abigail Gerber, 13.96 meters. Addison McCarter got second in the triple jump, 11.93 meters. That is a school record. She broke her own from earlier in the year. And she's a freshman. Then our other relay to get second place, the 4x4, ran it in 3:56.97. It was Trinity Tools, Taden Kirchner, Isabel Salters, and Kayla Kirchner. So I think
doubled up.
It's capped at five events per person. So okay. We took Rodensel out and put Taden in there.
Because she's probably, yeah, Rodensel's qualified, so
that's
the tactic,
and
right?
And you want her getting points for in her other events as well.
Sure, okay.
So they maxed her out, and yeah. Tayden's been doing well in that 400.
Nice.
Second place men, we had Luke Hamang in the race walk as well, 24:03.73, so he was only about 20 seconds off of Johnny.
The Johnny Padawan.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Raise him well, Johnny.
Mm-hmm, as the freshman.
Yeah.
Yep. He's training him well.
Yeah.
Matthew Boyer, he in the javelin as well, he 57-15. Connor Ash in the shot put, 16:31. For third place win, we talked about Adriana. Then we had Kayla Kirchner in the open four. She ran 57-41. Haley Miles in the long jump, 5.52 meters. And Addie Reimer in the heptathlon. She scored 4,204 points, which probably doesn't mean anything to any of you, but that's what she did.
Yeah, that is a lot of points.
Yeah. then to cap off our podium finishers on the men's side, we had Easton Fries in the 400 hurdles with a 54-43, and then Nathan Baldwin in the hammer throw, 55.8 meters.
They're so good.
They're so good.
So where are we at in terms of conference season? Do they have any more coming up? Are they looking towards Nationals already?
Yeah, so we've got Nationals coming up, but
nice.
There's one last chance for our athletes to qualify for Nationals.
Okay.
So we have the Concordia University Twilight Meet. So that's going to be here on May 9th, so this Friday, at 2 p.m. here at Bulldog Stadium. One of the last chances for our guys and gals to qualify. Then you also have the UNK Loper Twilight Meet on the 10th. So you kind of get two more chances. I think the athletes kind of get to choose if they want to compete or not.
Okay.
But so one more chance before Nationals, which is on May 21st in Marion, Indiana.
Alrighty.
So
maybe some names that you haven't heard as much, get some action there.
Right, because all the people who are qualified already, they won't be competing at this meet.
Yeah.
But certainly we will get some exciting finishers.
Yeah, that's always good. I think it's kind of like similar to like the end of most seasons, you know,
mm-hmm.
especially for a team like us where we have a lot of our stuff locked in.
Yep.
Now you put some of the freshmen in, and like in basketball, you know, you clear the benches a bit. So
right, let some other people get the spotlight and hopefully qualify them for Nationals.
Yeah,
as well.
That'd be awesome. You could,
and especially for those seniors who maybe didn't qualify for Nationals,
sure.
They can get one more meet, because if you're a senior who's not qualifying, you're probably not placing super high at conference, because that's very competitive. But at having a home meet for your last one, all the national qualifiers not running, you can really make some headlines there.
Get a
first or second place to cap off your career.
Would love to have to book an extra bus to go to Nationals. Where is Nationals?
Indiana.
It's in Indiana.
Yep.
Oh, wow. What's the thinking there that they have indoor Nationals in Miami?
I don't know.
And then they have outdoor in Indiana.
I guess maybe it'd be too hot in Florida in the spring.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be pretty nice weather there.
Yeah, maybe in Indiana. Maybe. I don't know.
So it's a bit more variables. Like, it could be very nice, or it could be 30 and snowing.
It's that Midwest, man. That'll get you.
Gotta love it.
That will get you. Well, that's pretty much that's all. That's baseball and track. That was all that we have today.
That's pretty much it. So I think that brings an end, as we're talking about track and field careers.
Yeah.
I think that brings an end to the...
Oh, well, we do have a little bit of Concordia athletic news. We'll go, and then we'll... Just quickly before we end the podcast, you have to tell us what was your half marathon time.
Oh, okay. And then you have to say what yours was.
Okay. All right. I will.
Okay. My half marathon time was... It was pretty much a 1 hour, 31 minute, 57 seconds.
Okay, I don't even want
to say
mine.
Which breaks down
anymore.
To 7 minute, 1 second miles.
Okay. Oh my God. I don't want to say mine anymore.
Well, you'll say it.
Okay, mine was 2:14, like 49. Just
that's
under 2:15.
That's not bad.
I was happy because they released the data, which they have a lot of data. Mm-hmm. Did you see the pictures they emailed?
Yeah, those are really sweet.
Those are pretty good.
And they don't make you pay for them.
They don't make you pay for them. Well, if you want to remove the watermark, but I'm fine with it.
Me too.
And I like the data of the runners you passed.
Yes.
I was positive.
Okay.
I passed 171. I only got passed by 12.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. I was moving.
What was your final placement?
It was something in the thousands. I don't know. Big number.
Well, there were 8,000 people in it.
I want to say middle of the pack.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It looked a lot worse when he did the breakdown by sex. Because I think I was just beating a lot of women.
And that's okay. You still beat them.
Yeah.
Should we check the results to see see where exactly you
Yeah,
place?
Give us yours, do mine.
Okay.
I'm gonna go for you. Okay, let me set a line. Who over under? I like you at 1750, and I'm gonna go.
So
under.
1,000.
I'm gonna go under.
I'm gonna go under as well.
Oh well, you're looking at the number.
Okay.
What'd you get?
So I placed. Let's see, does it say this?
There were so many people there.
Unable to retrieve records, what the heck?
There were so many people there.
All right, I'm going to look up a different website.
Yeah, do that. I think you're less than 1750. They tore that thing down real quick, though.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
The one thing I learned is that you should not change your routine at all.
Yeah.
From how you train. I did a carbo load. Was fine during the race.
Mm-hmm. Afterwards, not
afterwards,
so much.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll get a call from the porta potty company here in a few days.
You blew that one.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Oh, I was looking at the marathon. That's what it was.
You did not run that.
I did not. Thank goodness I didn't run that.
I made extra sure when that turn, when it said marathon to the left, half marathon to the right, I made extra sure I was on the right side of the road.
Okay, we have my overall placement.
Okay.
Which I believe was out of about 8,000 something.
All right, I think... Oh, 8,000?
Yeah.
I'm going to go over on the 1750.
I was 179th.
Out of 8? You were 179?
Uh-huh.
Is the Lincoln, I guess... Man, were you up there with, like the out-of-towners?
So, me and my friend, we actually put ourselves in too slow of a starting group.
What was your corral?
So, ours was the 146, the hour 46 group.
Oh, yeah, you shaved half an hour.
15 minutes.
Close.
Yeah.
Yeah, still.
So we were...
That's a lot.
My passing numbers would have been nuts just because we passed pretty much our whole group right away and then the next one.
Yeah.
But we still weren't, like, in sight of any of the top guys. Not even close.
Oh, really?
The top guy was, like, an hour five.
Top guy for the marathon, I think, cheated.
Really?
No, I'm not... I mean, not literally.
Making accusations here?
He was a... He said he kept telling people at the finish line, like, hey, this is my first race. Turns out he ran track at, like, Wichita Falls or something. Oh. So it's like, you've been doing this.
So, okay, I actually saw something in the news about this. So it was his first race this year, but he won the Lincoln Marathon last year.
So what is he on about?
So he got, like, hurt or something for a little bit and didn't run, but he won it last year. So this isn't like his first time ever running before.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, good for him.
We have your placement, 2,371.
Wow.
Out of 8,000.
I was under that my line. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, we shortchanged ourselves on the corral too. Our corral was G or H, and that was like a 245 corral.
Oh yeah.
So I did shave half an hour, which, in all fairness to myself, when they asked me for that time, I would have done a 245 marathon.
Mm-hmm.
But then I trained. I was like, yeah, I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
Adrenaline got me through the first 6 miles.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That was awesome.
It's nuts.
It wasn't until, like, mile 10 that I started regretting things.
Those hills on 11 and 12, though.
So bad. So bad.
But
if you do it, run it with a buddy.
Oh, you have to run with someone.
You have to run it with someone. Miles 6 through 9, me and my friend, it was entirely Jordan-LeBron debate. And those miles flew by.
Yep. Mine and my friends, we probably about 15 times during the race, one of us would say, dude, we should slow the pace down. The other one would go, yeah, let's slow down for a little bit. And our pace would stay exactly the same. There was one time we were on a hill. We were on a hill. And my friend, he goes, dude, I think we need to slow down for a little bit. And I go, okay, we just reached the next pacer group. So I said, let's just stay with this pacer group for the rest of this big hill.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay. I proceed to watch him, not 5 seconds later, make a move and pass the guy.
Yeah.
He just passes him. And I'm like, okay, guess we're going to speed up now.
Object in motion stays in motion.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. It really is hard. Because, like, when you think that you're going at a good pace, it's hard to ease up.
Yeah. And then it's hard to speed up again after that. You kind of get set into your pace.
That if I was going to do it again, I would know. I feel like I'd have a lot more. It'd be a lot more scenic, which isn't the point. But if I actually knew what my time was, because after that first half mile, we were nowhere in sight of any of the pacers,
mm-hmm.
because we were going faster than our group, but we weren't going fast enough to, like, catch up with, like, the groups.
Did you have a watch that you were tracking?
I had a watch, but it's like this Chinese. It's so bad. It took me like 2 days because it came and it shipped in Mandarin. I couldn't figure out how to work the app, but now I've got it working, and the entire time it said my pace was 10:17, and it never fluctuated.
Well, that's what it was.
It was about that.
Yeah.
So, law of averages, it ended up right. But real-time updates, that thing was horrible.
Okay.
But I'm glad I did it. Won't do it again.
No, you're not coming back?
I mean...
That's what you tell yourself right now.
If you know, like, what you should do... I just didn't like training for it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll just load up on, like, do a bunch of them right now. Now that I'm in half marathon shape.
Get in more shape
right
now.
For the short time of my life that I'll be in half marathon shape. Well, that'll be all. For this episode and for
this chapter.
This tandem of the Talking Dogs experience.
Yeah.
But be sure to stay tuned in the future, especially next year, because you're going to have Kai Ulbrich and Aaron Spivey.
Yes, he is your replacement, next man up.
Batting down the hatches. That'll be fun. And be sure to stay tuned that year in the future for weekly podcasts on the CU NewsHour website and on Spotify. From Cohen Carpenter and Kai Ulbrich and everybody at the CU NewsHour newspaper, have a good day and go Dawgs!